Well, I'm not gonna lie, I am incredibly excited about this episode coming up because today's guest is a world-class keynote speaker. He's an author and he's been coaching and speaking all around the world with some of the best businesses, some of the most elite organizations for over a decade. And I know you're gonna love it. And his dad is Tony Robbins, the personal development guru, who when I was 17, I read Tony Robbins' book, Awaken the Giant Within, and completely changed my life. So I know you're going to enjoy this episode. So without further ado, let's get into this. Hi, everyone, and welcome back or welcome to The Psychology of Success. I'm Paul McVeigh. And as a Premier League footballer, I was always fascinated by the world of elite performance. And I've been really fortunate to discuss and share some great insight in the first few episodes from the worlds of international rugby, the Olympics, the NFL, sports psychology, my own sport, football. But today we're going to delve into the world of business. Now, my next guest is a world-class keynote speaker. He is a best-selling author and an executive coach. And he's also one of the most inspirational people I've ever met in my entire life. So please welcome Jarek Robbins. Jarek, how are you doing, my friend?
Hey, very, very good. And yourself?
Yeah, fantastic. Listen, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on. I've obviously been friends with you for over 10 years now. We'll probably get into how we met a little bit later on. But I just wanted to say, you know, I know you've had a little bit of a scare with your son recently that he hasn't been well. So hope everything is better now. Is that okay?
He is doing better, which we're excited about.
Yeah, brilliant. So listen, it's just really good to have you. And we're going to delve into some of the reasons why you've done the kind of things and the amazing things that you've done in your life. But I suppose we need to find out, first of all, whereabouts in the world are you?
Puerto Rico.
Perfect. And I'm in Ireland, so what could go wrong? I'm sure we're going to have some fun. Listen, Jarek, I ask everybody that's been on the show, and the first question I always come out with is, what is the definition of success?
So I grew up in a space where the whole concept of the definition of success was life on your terms. You get to decide what success is. As I've traveled around the world, I remember I was in Dubai speaking about it. I was in India speaking about it. And in different places, I've just had people pull me aside and go, listen, that's nonsense. Why do people want to redefine what things are? And I said, what do you mean? And they're like, well, all these speakers are talking about how success is whatever you make it to be. Success is whatever you desire. Success is, and they're like, no, it's not. Success is very specifically, accomplishing whatever it is that you're after. And they started to have more detailed definitions. And I thought about that and I said, that's interesting. So there's kind of two paradigms. And I drew a line down the middle. I said, there's one group of people that allows a dictionary, which was a man-made object written by some other person to determine what success is and what success isn't in their life. And then there's another group of people who've decided success is literally whatever I want it to be. I said, that's really fascinating. I wonder what the difference is between those two people's experiences in life. People who decide what they want and call that their version of success, and people who are told what they're supposed to do and they just go achieve whatever they were told. I said, that's interesting. I'm like, when's the first time we were told in our life what we're supposed to and not supposed to do? And then as I rewound that, I said, oh my God. Well, if you think about it, from pretty much the moment you're born, you're given a nationality, you're given a religion, you're given a clan or group or tribe that you supposedly belong to because that's where you were born. You're told who you're supposed to like and who you're not supposed to like, depending on the history of your tribe or community or family. All these things are what we're told to do literally from the day we're born. And I always ask people, at what point in your life did you sit down and look at all the options? Like, you studied anything you could do in your health. You studied everything you could do in your religion. You studied anything you could do for business. You studied all the options as far as relationships and who you can have them with and how. You studied all the options. And then you made a conscious decision that says, as a grown adult who's looked at all the variables, these are the things I personally choose. And so when you're looking at success, I think success starts with someone who's willing to do enough homework to understand what all the variables are, and who's then willing to decide based on who they are and what's true to them, what path is right for them. I think when someone can figure that out and then walk that path, that's what I deem success.
Wow, that's fantastic. What an amazing first answer. And I kind of knew that you were going to give me such a comprehensive answer. And probably if anyone is joining us on LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, I bet they're sitting there questioning what they're doing and what success means to them. So fantastic answer, Jerry. So let's talk about you and all of the stuff you had growing up and the different things around you in your life, because it makes me think of growing up in Belfast as an Irish Catholic. Then we obviously had certain traditions, things that we shouldn't like, and people we shouldn't like. But whenever you were growing up, what kind of things were really into the equation of what directed you in a certain direction?
All kinds of things. I mean, I grew up going to Catholic school since pre-kindergarten, so very young. I was in Catholic school for the first probably 3 or 4 years of my education. And then after that, I went to public school, which was non-religious based and just school. After that, I went to high school, again, non-religious. And then in university, I went back to a Catholic university. I was not Catholic at any point in that time. That's just the university or school I went to. And so I grew up going to mass and going to church and learning the Bible and all those things from a very young age. And so those are things that were reinforced and taught to me when I was a little dude. And then at a point in my life, if I look at the sides of my family, my mom's side and my grandpa on that side is very religious in Christianity. My dad's side was very broad. I think when I was little, he believed in the Baha'i faith, which is an all faiths religion. And I never knew what that was until I traveled to India and went to one of the Baha'i temples. And it's the first time I sat in a pew and looked around and I was like, oh my gosh, there's someone practicing the religion as a Jewish person. There's someone who's a Muslim. There's someone who's a Christian. There's someone who's all of these faiths sitting in the same building practicing what they believe to be true, but all friends, all getting along, all talking, all going out to lunch after. What the heck? That's pretty cool. And so I started to learn those different things. One of my favorite classes I took was a class that was required by the university. It was a class on world religions taught by a Buddhist monk at a Catholic university. And I just thought that was so cool because this lady was Buddhist and that's what she believed. And she was teaching us about the 5 major religions of the world at a Catholic university. And one of my favorite things the school did once a year was having an all faith ceremony where they brought in people from all faiths to come and into the chapel and do their faith. And I thought it was so cool. What that opened my mind to is looking at all the different options in life and being willing to study them, being willing to learn about them, being willing to learn what I like about them, what I don't like about them, and being willing to apply that to my life. I think so many of us are caught up doing whatever we were told instead of sitting back and saying, well, let me take time, effort, and energy and actually research the options, deeply learn about them, go sit in on a couple services and watch the kind of people that are there and meet them and see them and talk with them, then decide what's right for me. I think if you take that point of view and you're lucky enough to travel around the world to some extent, you realize how beautiful humans are no matter where they are or what they're practicing. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's fantastic to hear that kind of broader picture.
You're listening to the Psychology of Success podcast with Paul McVeigh, sponsored by Moment Digital Limited, live streaming and video producers creating live event content that looks like TV shows, broadcast quality without the cost. Check us out at moment-digital.co.uk.
Jarek, you're talking about how probably the traveling in your early days maybe broadened your horizons. And that reminds me of when I was 16 and leaving Ireland, growing up in that kind of Irish Catholic community, and suddenly walking down a road, the high road in North London, and within a probably 500 yard, maybe, you know, a kilometer long road, I passed 100 yards of Jewish people, then 100 yards of Indian people, then 100 yards of Pakistanis, then Africans, then Turkish people. And it was suddenly my eyes were just completely open to these new nationalities, new religions, new faiths, different races, all within such a tiny area in London. And I'm guessing that's probably what you're talking about, of that experience of traveling around the world. But it leads me on to, because I know you had a very, very difficult time when you went traveling to Uganda.
So the time was wonderful. I just made a couple of bad decisions that didn't add up very well for me. Living in Uganda was something I did when I was 20 years old. I was over there teaching organic farming and helping in the villages. And it was spectacular. Beautiful place, beautiful part of the planet, beautiful people. It was a really, really wonderful trip. And how that came to be was I took a trip called Semester at Sea, which was a ship with about 800 students on it that circumnavigated the globe. So we started off in Vancouver, Canada, and we sailed over to, I think we did Tokyo or Kobe, Japan, Tokyo. Then we went down into Shanghai, China. We went to Hong Kong. We went to, just to give you a list, India, Vietnam, Thailand, Brazil, Venezuela, Florida, all within 110 days. So we took a trip, South Africa, all the way around the world. And when we were doing that, stopping in different countries or continents and seeing how people lived, I was studying psychology on board. So I'd get to get off the ship and study in a book what people are like in this kind of place, and then walk into the country and actually see people interacting and go, oh my God, the book's right. People do really behave like that here. This is interesting. And as we traveled around the world, it changed my whole perspective. I grew up in Southern California in the United States, and I didn't realize how abundant of a place it was. Because when you're a kid, you look at what you have, you look at what you don't have, and then you think, man, life would be great if I had more of what I don't have. Usually. It's how the media is built. It's how television's built, to constantly show us something we don't have and make us want it, so we go buy it. And so I grew up thinking, man, if I could just have a life like, at the time, I looked at someone like, I don't know, Puff Daddy and Biggie Smalls in the music video Hypnotized, thinking they're really living the life. Cars, planes, yachts, girls, traveling, guys, all this stuff. I'm like, this is so cool. And after traveling around the world, I came home and I literally emptied my closet and gave it all to a charity organization for people who needed clothes. I really saw no purpose in collecting any more stuff or material things. My main focus was just, how do I help more people? And part of what sparked that was, walking through India and seeing thousands of people just sleeping on the streets every night. Walking through in South Africa, I remember they took us to a little shanty town that was made out of these little metal shacks. And at a time in history, every Friday they were bulldozed down and people had to rebuild their house literally once a week. Visited the Maasai tribe in Tanzania and saw people who lived literally in mud huts. And I was like, oh my God, that's amazing. People really live like that. And they're happy. They're content. They're healthy. And whenever I would talk about it, people would always say, oh my gosh, I know. People who have so little seem to be so happy. And I always go, whoa, whoa, whoa. They have so little of what? And they go, well, they don't have a lot of stuff. I'm like, but wait a second. Do they have their health? Yeah. Do they have people who care about them? Yeah. Do they have a community? Yeah. Do they have something they do every day that brings meaning and purpose in their life? Yeah. Then I don't know what they're missing, because they seem to have everything that's needed for a great life. And then people kind of think for a second, go, well, you know what I mean? Like, they don't have cars and they don't have a lot of clothes and they don't have like good restaurants, stuff like that. And I said, you just listed three things that are not necessary for a great life, but you're obsessed with them because the media has told you to be obsessed with them. And I think coming back to the psychology of success and looking at performance, it's getting really clear on, are you performing in the parts of life that are required to have a great life? Or are you excelling in the things in life that will make literally no difference in the overall long-term quality of your life? You got to think about what you're choosing to excel in, what you're choosing to put time, effort, energy, and resources into, and ask, is this actually going to increase the overall quality of my life? Or is this just going to make me feel good for 30 seconds and then get bored and have to go chase something else?
Yeah, that, and that is something that we see all the time with people who are, you know, working 50, 60, 70 hours a week, and then suddenly realize that that's just not enough. You know, maybe whatever success they might have in their professional lives, if other areas of their life aren't equally as successful or they're not as content and fulfilled, then clearly the professional access or part of their life isn't enough. So how do you help people when you are working with, because you've worked with businesses and, you know, MDs, CEOs all over the world, how do you actually help them achieve a performance across their entire life?
Sure. Consistent measurable improvement. So we look at metrics. If you were a runner in the Olympics, I need to know how fast can you move your physical body around the track. So I put you on the track and we have you run. And I don't care how big of a story you tell me. I'm the fastest. I'm Lightning McGee. I'm faster than anyone who's ever seen this track. My God, my feet light the track on fire. That's cool. That's all the story of what you say you can do. I don't care about the story. I care about the results. So get on the track and run. And I'm going to time you and we're going to see what's real. The quality of sleep you're having every night. When we get metrics on the breath pattern that operates your body every day. And we have little machines we use to track all this stuff. We have a medical grade EEG device that measures your brain waves where you meditate each morning that we have our clients use. We know how well a grown human with their best effort can clear their mind for 10 minutes. And the truth is, if you can't clear your mind for 10 minutes in the morning, what are the odds that you can actually stay focused all day on any of your major projects? The answer is no, none, not a chance. You're not going to be able to do it. So we got to know, how are you operating? We use devices like these things to track your sleep quality, sleep duration. And we're not just looking for quantity, how long you're sleeping. We're looking for how good are you sleeping? How well are you recovering? We track your heart rate variability to understand, is your nervous system recovering just as much as your physical body? And as we track these things, one of my favorite is a breath tracker we use that tracks your breathing pattern all day. Tells us when you're calm, when you're focused, and when you're stressed. And then we can match it up against your calendar. And we can see what things are actually causing you to be stressed in your body throughout the day. And we don't eliminate or remove those things. We teach you how to breathe better through those things so that you can handle the same stressful situation, but your body doesn't react in a state of stress. It reacts in a state of calm or focused or just really centered and present. And we can change those things over time. So we track and measure all your performance metrics. And then we hold it up against who you want to be, and we put together a performance plan of how to work you there day by day.
That is absolutely sensational, because I've never come across that before. You know, and considering I had nearly 20 years, well, 25 years in total in an elite and sporting environment, and, you know, we did things like measuring our fitness, our aerobic ability, our, you know, our strength, all of the different physical aspects, but we never went into anywhere near the amount of detail that you have just discussed there. So that is absolutely blowing me away. But I think that leads me on to why, whenever, you know, we've obviously seen what you've been doing, and I've known you now for just over 10 years, and you've been working with, you know, organizations right at the very pinnacle of their industries, you know, such like Harvard University, the US Marine Corps, the US Olympic team, you know, BMW. There's just these organizations would be right at the very top of their industry. So what are some of the things that you're sharing to help them improve their performance as well as recording their metrics?
Totally. So one of my friends, I'll give you something you can do right now, and anyone can do this. One of my friends is Dr. Leah Lagos. She's a biofeedback specialist in New York City. She also works with top athletes, Olympians, hedge fund managers, top business professionals. And one thing she taught me, there's an app called Elite HRV. I don't have any connection to them whatsoever, except for she recommended it to me. It requires some type of heart rate monitor or device. And in it, she created a program that over 10 weeks, it's 20 minutes of breath work in the morning, 20 minutes of breath work at night. And within, I think it's 7 to 10 weeks, it recalibrates your entire nervous system to calm. Now, some people, especially in the athletic field, go, I can't be calm all the time. I'm going to lose the game. You go, no. Imagine the inside of your body being stoically calm while the outside of your body is running, jumping, attacking, or defending at maximum capacity, meaning you're pushing your physical body to the absolute realm of possibility. You're running faster than you've ever run, jumping higher than you've ever jumped, pushing harder than you've ever pushed. But inside, you're like a monk who's been meditating for decades of their life, calm, still, centered, peaceful, relaxed. Here's why that's important. When your heart rate jumps up over 95 beats a minute when you're just sitting still, like let's say you and I are talking, sitting down, your heart rate spikes over 95 beats a minute, you lose access to the executive functioning part of your brain, meaning you can no longer cognitively comprehend what it is that I'm saying to you. You can't process it. You can't think straight. The other thing that happens when your heart rate jumps like that, you lose access to your fine motor movement, which let's say you're a golfer, you lose access to the ability to slightly adjust your swing, which is where all the magic is in golfing. Let's say you're a hedge fund manager. You lose access to the critical thinking part of your brain that makes logical, intelligent decisions. I think that's pretty damn important when you're about to trade a $120 million trade. So all of these things are important. If you take your executive team of your organization, let's say someone says something and causes four of the other team members to have a heart rate spike, all of a sudden, they can't cognitively comprehend what it is the person's saying next. This is the difference between success or failure. This is the difference between the little adjustment that causes you to get a hole in one or causes you to shank the ball completely off the course and get disqualified. This is the difference between coming out positive in your daily trading results or coming out behind and losing it. And it all comes down to training your brain to get into a place where no matter how much exertion your external body's doing, your internal nervous system, mind, brain, and breath are completely centered, grounded, and aligned during the whole time. Standing in the middle of chaos, calm, centered, and grounded. Imagine standing in a giant storm and you're kind of standing in the eye of the storm, completely calm, watching the chaos just fly around you. That's what this is. It's a training protocol that gives you the ability to get there and stay there, which is amazing. And so she has this little program. It requires 20 minutes in the morning, 20 minutes at night for 10 weeks. And by doing it, it literally recalibrates your entire nervous system back to calm. She charges about $15,000 to fly to New York City and do that with her in person, or you can do it digitally and virtually as well. The equipment's super expensive and pricey, but she's the best in the world at what she does. On the flip side, she put it into the app Elite HRV for free. So anyone who has a heart rate monitor can access the app, look for Dr. Leah Lagos in the app, turn it on for 10 weeks, do it in the morning and at night with her. And it's literally a mini version of her entire program that she put for free just to help as many people as she could right into the app. I think that's really cool. So that's something we do with some of our executives, some of our students who are stressed out over exams, some of our special operators in the Air Force who need to be focused and calm while maintaining a high level of activity. All of these things require the ability to do exactly what I just described. Stand in the middle of chaos and perform at your max capacity while staying mentally, breath-wise, and emotionally completely centered and calm during the whole process.
Today's podcast is sponsored by CSS Investments, a London-based regulated stockbroker that offers a bespoke advisory investment service for stocks and shares. I've personally used CSS for over 5 years now and happily recommend their services. You can find out more at css-investments.com. But please do remember that as with all investing, your capital is at risk. Now, Jarek, you're a best-selling author. Your book, Live It, Achieve Success by Living with Purpose. And I think we touched on it already a little bit earlier, but purpose is probably one of the driving forces that drives everything you do in your life. What are your thoughts on why that's so important?
If you take a human and you remove a purpose, a reason for them to get up and do stuff every day, what happens? In my experience, they generally don't live very long after that. When they lose their purpose, they lose their reason to live. They lose their willpower. They lose their drive. They lose the reason why they wake up and get out of bed every day. And so I posted something the other day for people who are needing help discovering their purpose. And I got flooded with direct messages of people asking for help. Let me see if I can find the questions real quick. We were looking at a handful of questions to help people find their purpose. And as we dug through it, there's layers here. And I think your purpose has to do with staying deeply aligned with your core values, the things that are highest and most important to you. A friend of mine wrote a book called The Values Factor. I highly recommend it, Dr. John DeMartini. And in the book, and he actually shared this with me, he has 13 questions he uses to help you filter and determine what your highest and most important values are. I'll give you three, and then I'll give you a link for a survey you can take for the rest of them. But number one, what do you fill your space with? What are the three highest value items that you're most connected to? Now, at this point in history, if you don't write down your cell phone, you're lying. Why? Because how many of you are sitting on the couch, you stand up to go to the kitchen, and when you're four steps away from the couch, you go, oh, shoot, I forgot my phone on the couch. You walk back to the couch to grab your cell phone before returning to the kitchen. My God, if you don't admit that you are addicted to this piece of technology and you can't even go across the room without it, yeah, you need a little introspection time for yourself. It's wild to me that most people, you can't even go upstairs without the phone because you're worried you're going to miss something that's going to magically happen on it. So what are the other two things that you keep with you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week? What are the things you keep physically closest to you? That's question number one. Question two, what do you choose to spend your time on? What you spend time on is a reflection of what's most important to you. What you make time for, you value. What you can't make time for, you don't value. When people say, I'm too busy to work out, what you're really saying is, I don't value working out. I value doing whatever else I do more than I value physically working out. I'm too busy to have a relationship. You're just saying, I don't value having a relationship. I value whatever I'm doing more than having time for a relationship. Whatever you're making time for in your life is the thing you actually value. You need to be clear on what that is. Number three, what energizes you? When you're around something or someone or a situation that's valuable to you, you get energized. Your energy expands. When you're doing something or around something that you don't care about, your energy contracts. So the third question is, what energizes you? What things do you do that energize, fill you up, multiply your energy from the inside out? And so as you can tell in questions like this, it makes you think about other parts of your life in other ways that when you start to see the pattern of answers through all 13 questions, you go, oh my gosh, it is so clear and obvious what I value most. Now, living with purpose to me is spending 80% plus of your life in activities that are aligned with your highest and most important values. I'll say it again. Living with purpose is living a life where you're spending 80% or more of your time in activities that are aligned with your highest and most important values. When you meet someone who congruently spends 80% of every moment of their life doing the things that are most important to them, that they care most about, they're alive, they're abundant with energy, they have so much zest, and they're magnetic in who they are and how they are. No matter how calm they are or alive and crazy they are, they're just people you love to be around. Now, on the other side, if you've ever spent significant amount of time with someone who is not living in alignment with their values, they're exhausted, they're lethargic, they're always talking about how much they hate their life and how bored, how they can't wait to go do something else. They're always running away from the reality that's their day-to-day life. I see all these people on Instagram talking about my trip, my travel, my thing, I'm going somewhere. And I was like, man, what are you running away from? Clearly, whatever you value you don't have at home. Otherwise, you'd be home with what you value. But instead, you're constantly running from something. It's like that movie. They're trying to silence the lambs screaming in their mind. Therefore, they're constantly running away from the thing that is their home. It's very interesting. So I look deeply at stuff like this, and living with purpose is living deeply aligned with their values. Now, some people say, well, I value traveling. So do I. I love to travel. And I made sure to create a life at home that I never want to try to escape from. I love to travel. I love to stay home. I love both. There's nothing that I'm running to, nothing that I'm running from. I've learned how to design both so that they're completely full without or with each other, if that makes sense.
Definitely. I think it also makes me think how, you know, and I've seen both sides of that spectrum of people who are driven, they're focused, that they have a real clear sense of their intrinsic values, their core values, and they work on those every day. But I've also come across so many people, and I'm sure you have too, Jarek, where they just either aren't sure of their values, they're not living their life aligned with those values, or they're going to a job that they just don't like, they just can't be bothered doing, but they still do it 5 days a week for 30, 40 years, and they don't really understand why. Why do you think people do that?
Again, it goes back to what you were taught when you were 5 minutes old. This is who you are. This is what you're going to do. This is how you're going to live. And this is what your life's going to be like, period. Now, if you look at the grand scheme of things, if you step back and you go, oh my God, but if I don't live into that framework, I mean, isn't society going to fall apart? And I always kind of laugh. I'm like, well, wait a second. There's 7 billion humans on the planet. Why don't you let the other 6,998,999,000 whatever humans, why don't you let them live inside the framework? And why don't you choose to be one of the handful that goes, you know what, screw it. I'm going to live the life I want to live. I'm going to live in alignment with what I value most. I'm going to live to my truth and do what I believe is right in the world. I'll respect and honor the traditions around me and allow everyone else to do what they want to do. I'm not going to walk around and make people wrong. But instead, I'm going to choose the life that I want to live, and I'm going to make that real. And hopefully, if you set it up correctly, that it's what I call a class one experience. It's good for you. It's good for others. It feels good, and it serves the greater good of humanity. If you get all four of those right, my goodness, you love it. It helps people. It's what you're made for. And it does something really good for the overall whole of society in general. Now, if you settle for a class three experience, it's something that feels good in the moment, not good for you, not good for others, does not serve the greater good of humanity. At that point, you're being selfish and just thinking about yourself. So elevate, get to that class one experience where it both feels good, but it genuinely serves the greater good of humanity as a whole by you showing up and doing your part every day.
Yeah, and I think that's what probably most people will struggle with, because, you know, even from starting this podcast and doing the show for the last 7 weeks or so, I've already been getting messages and people, you know, contacting me saying about, it's kind of, it's all well and good for people, whether I've had someone who was a quarterback in the NFL, Jay Fiedler, or someone who ran in the Olympics, or people who've played international rugby. It's almost like people look at these successful, whether it's athletes or successful business people, and say, it's all well and good for you because of you had those opportunities, but I never had those opportunities.
Yeah. So the way to break this down that anyone can wrap their head around what success is and how to get there, most people are thinking way too short term. Meaning you're thinking, how can I achieve X amount of money, or how can I make X amount of difference in the next 6 days, 6 weeks, 6 months? And what you should really be asking is, I wish I could show this image. I don't think there's a screen share option on here. But if there was, I'd show you an image of Warren Buffett's wealth over time. If you look at it, I'll see if I can get it up on my phone and kind of hold it up on the screen a little. If you look at this dude's wealth over time, it's amazing, and I'll just read you some of the numbers so you can see how it went. Let me get it on my iPad. It's a little bigger. And I'll just read you some of the numbers. Warren Buffett, if you're not familiar with him, is a U.S. investor. And he was born in the United States. He's been investing money since he was 14 years old. If I were to grab, let me see if I can find it really quick. Where is it? So this guy started investing at 14 years old with a grand total of $5,000. So with $5,000, and if I said, hey, you're 14 years old, you start investing $5,000. If you had to guess, by the time you were going to be, let's do two decades, you started with $5,000. By the time you're going to be 34 years old, how much money do you think you'll have if you started with $5,000? So from $5,000 to 35 years old, how far do you think you got?
Sounds to me somewhere around the kind of, I don't know, hundreds of thousands, a couple of hundred thousand.
Right.
Maybe? I don't know, 100,000.
So at 34 years old, Warren Buffett, for two decades, for 20 years, he was laser focused on investing. Only big focus. He went from $5,000 to $3.4 million in 20 years.
That's a pretty good return. I wouldn't mind some kind of returns like that, to be honest.
Now, guess how much? Guess what happened between 34 and 44?
I'm thinking maybe 10 million.
Well, he went from 3.4 million to 19 million in the next 10-year gap of his life. Guess what happened from 44 to 54?
I'm kind of just thinking I should have started investing earlier. That's my only thought here in terms of the numbers.
Well, I'll show you. I'll go through it quickly and then I'll rewind and tell you the point. From 34, he was at 3.4 million. At 44, he's at 19 million. At 54, he's at 1.2 billion. At 64, he's at about 16 billion. At 74, he's at roughly 40-50 billion. And at 84, he's roughly around $70 billion net worth.
Wow. But my question is, Jarek, my question is he happy?
Well, yeah. If you know Warren, he's super simple, super happy, and he honestly doesn't care a lot about money, which blows people's minds. There's two parts of this that's really important. Here's my first question. What have you done continuously for 77 years of your life?
Not a lot at the minute. Halfway through.
But if I gave you 77 years to perfect something, do you think you could master it?
Yeah, you would really hope so, wouldn't you? Because if you're dedicated and you really are motivated to work on that on a consistent basis, you'd think it wouldn't even take that long.
That's right. And if I gave you 77 years, let's say I give you 40 years to master something, the next 40 years of your life, what are you willing to do? Keyword is willing, not willing. Like, okay, fine, I'll do it. I'm willing to do it. Willing, willpower. What are you willing yourself to do every single day for the next 40 years to get an unbelievable result? Now, it's unbelievable to say this dude took $5,000 and turned it into roughly $100 billion over 78 plus years. That is unbelievable. The crazy part is 80% of his entire wealth was made in the last 20 years of his life.
That is just the power of compound interest, right?
Was in the last 20 years. That means for 60 years, he worked at something and only achieved 20% of the result for 60 years of effort. What if I asked you to do something for the next 60 years of your life and told you you're only going to get 20% of the result? But if you keep going for another 20 years, you're going to get 80% of results that will blow your mind in the next two decades. The reason why most people struggle with performance and success is they're thinking in days and they're not thinking in decades. They're not saying, what's the one habit I would need to lock in that if I maintain that habit for the next 20, 30, 40, and 50 years of my life would create an unbelievable result? And for Warren Buffett, that habit happens to be reading board reports for about 5 to 6 hours a day. For decades of his life, he spends 5 to 6 hours a day reading board reports of companies and corporations. Now, if you've ever read a board report, they're boring as hell. But he loves them. He loves reading board reports. He thinks they're the coolest thing ever. He nerds out over reading these things. He thinks they're so much fun. You imagine doing something for 6 hours a day you think is awesome, and you do it every day, and the end result of doing it happens to be you make ridiculous amounts of money. What a cool life.
Yeah.
So when you ask, is he happy? I go, well, shit, he's doing something that aligns him with his highest and most important value for 6 hours a day, every day, for 8 decades of his life. He's been doing the thing he loves to do every day for 6 hours a day, every single day for 80 years. I think that's pretty much successful, regardless of the return. It just happens that the thing he really enjoys doing for 6 hours a day gives him some unique compounding knowledge that allows him to make some really smart and a couple stupid, but mostly really smart business transactions that has earned him an insane amount of money. It's not about the money. It's about the fact that a dude at 14 years old figured out what he loved to do and chose to do it for over 77 additional years of his life every single day. And he willed himself to do it for over 6 hours a day every day for 7 decades plus.
You're listening to the Psychology of Success podcast with Paul McVeigh, sponsored by Moment Digital Limited. Live streaming and video producers creating live event content that looks like TV shows. Broadcast quality without the cost. Check us out at moment-digital.co.uk.
Now, Jarek, I've talked about you growing up in America, the travel you've had, the performance, the work you've done speaking around the world, writing a book. Now, this obviously came from being influenced probably at a young age by your dad. Now, for anyone who doesn't know that Tony Robbins is your dad, that must have been very influential on what you did and how you did things growing up, but also what you do now as a grown man. Is that right?
Sure. So our parents are one of our first sources of influence, and there's things I gather. There's three core major influences I had in my life when I was young. Number one is my mom. She has a huge, huge heart, just cared so deeply about humans. And I remember watching my mom. She was not good with money, but she was good with caring. Like, she would be out of money and use her credit card to buy a gift card, which I don't even know if that's legal, to go give a homeless person a gift card for food. And I'm like, Mom, you don't have money. She's like, that's okay. They don't have food. Here, let me do this. And here, give me a gift card. I'll give it to the person so they can have some food today. And I was like, wow, she gives even when she doesn't even have anything. She gives. She gives the people. She gives the animals. I remember she passed away a few years ago, but before she passed away, I was helping her with her finances. And I kept reading that she was ordering these gourmet nuts from some company online. Like gourmet cashews, gourmet peanuts, and they were expensive. I'm like, Mom, what? Who's eating all the nuts? And she's like, oh, that's for the squirrels. I was like, you gotta be shitting me. You're buying gourmet nuts from an online company for a squirrel that lives outside in the tree? There's nuts in the tree. Let him eat the tree nuts. And she's like, no, they're my friends. I'm like, oh God. So she loved to give and support things even when it didn't even logically make sense to me or other people. She's number one, caring. Number two, my grandma. My grandma was someone to me that she grew up in a time in history when segregation was part of the United States. We're half Spanish and Mexican and American Indians. We're brown. And I remember she told me a story where she went to the pool in the city. There was one pool. And they let all the colored kids, which she was part of that group, swim in the pool. And then after they got out, they emptied the pool and some dude got in there with a scrub brush and soap to clean the pool so that then the white kids could swim and not get dirty, quote unquote. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, what did that feel like as a kid? And she's like, it was horrible. And I was like, okay, fast forward. She was a mother of five. She took care of all the kids. My grandpa worked two jobs. Fast forward, after the kids grew up, she was at a stage in history where now women could go to work. She went to work and became the number one sales rep in every single company she's ever worked for. She was on the cover of Newsweek magazine. She has the key to the city of Los Angeles for Businesswoman of the Year. I mean, she's accomplished and broken through every glass ceiling you could imagine as a professional businesswoman at that stage in history who just found a way to make it happen. My favorite thing she taught me was, do not pity yourself. Do not pretend and just sit there in some story telling you how it's not fair and it's not equal and they're doing it because of my skin color or whatever. She goes, no, that's a bunch of nonsense. Take the hand you were dealt and you play it to win the damn game. She said, don't complain. It wastes time and energy. She said, instead, whatever hand you were dealt, take those cards and find a way to win the game. She says, I was a woman. I was brown. I mean, she lived in a part of town where my great-grandpa, her father, bought an investment property. They told him he couldn't buy it there because that was the white part of town. He bought it anyways because he was stubborn. And 2 days later, they burn it down. So that kind of stuff happened through her childhood and through her adult years. And she just told me, she goes, life is unfair. Doesn't matter. Take the hand you're dealt and you play that hand to win and you always find a way to win. And she did. She's the number one person in every single company she's ever worked for as long as I've known her and as long as she's been doing it. Very impressive. She's been doing it for over 40 years. Different industries, different companies. Third person would be my dad. And my dad, so my mom brought in deep caring about everyone and everything. My grandma brought in, play the hand you're dealt and play it to win the game. Don't play to play, play to win. And win. Do what it takes to win with whatever hand you're dealt. Play the cards and play them right. Number three was my dad. He was someone who grew up with no real role models, no support, no special connections or anything like that. And he went from, you know, I remember my grandma used to live in a trailer and my dad, they grew up in very humble financial means. And he went from there to becoming unbelievably financially successful through a vehicle that he focused on helping people. How can I help people and get paid very well for it? He figured that out. He did it extremely well. And he's become an icon in his industry over all these years. And so for me, he represents possibility. What's really possible? If you take anything you have and everything you've got and you pour it into something, and again, just to recap on the consistency, he's been doing it for over 40 years now. And with over 40 years of consistency, he's built an unbelievable career and you know, changed the world for the better for millions and millions of people all over Earth. And so in looking at that, he represents possibility to me. If you're willing to stay consistent and dedicated to something over a significant period of time that's focused on helping others live a better life, you can make a radical dent in the universe in a positive way over a long period of time, as long as you're willing to consistently do the work over that time and consistently live true to what it is that you're sharing with people.
Well, I think all of those influences really helps me understand you as a person, because I can see why you do what you do with all of those different areas, whether it's the caring, the business acumen, or just wanting to help people. So that's absolutely fantastic to hear, Jarek. My last question for you, and I can't believe we're already coming up to the end of the show, but my last question for you is, in 2021 and going forward at this stage in your life, considering you told me what the definition of success is almost split into two camps at the start of the show, what is your definition of success for you in your life going forward?
Sure. So my definition of success is reaching people who need us most at the moment they need it with the message they need. Every single day we push out content through podcasts like this, through Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, all these places. And I get comments all the time. I can't believe you have great content. I can't believe it's not reaching more people. I'm not necessarily concerned with more people. I'm concerned with reaching the one person who actually needs it that day. And we're blessed and honored that every single day of the week, we get messages from all the platforms and emails stuff. And it's just people saying, thank you. I needed to hear this today. The simplest is just the thank you. The most heartfelt and touching ones was someone read a copy of my book, and they were an airman who was deployed for war, who came back. She had a horrible PTSD, and she wrote me a handwritten letter and said, Mr. Robbins, I'm a soldier. I've been deployed. I came home. I have horrible PTSD. For the last 6 days, I've had my firearm in my mouth wanting to pull the trigger every night because I felt like I can't live like this anymore. Someone gave me a copy of your book. I read it, and it reminded me of the reason of why I want to keep on living. And I just wanted to say thank you for that. And to me, as a business and as a human, I don't think there's any better success in the world than to be able to reach that person who needed us most at the exact moment they needed us with the message they needed on that day. And so my version of success is continuing to reach the people who need us most at the moment they need it with the message they need.
Wow. I think you're doing a remarkable job with that. And Derek, I've only just lastly just to thank you for your time, because that was absolutely incredible. Thank you very much.
Of course.
Well, I don't know about you, but I am absolutely exhausted just listening to Jarek for the last 60 minutes. That guy has so much energy, so much passion, such a zest for life that I hope you felt that. And when you were listening, you must have just realized just that this guy really is living with purpose. And hopefully you got something from it, because I know that that was probably the best episode we have done so far. But wow, Jarek Robbins, thank you so much. Hopefully, if you've enjoyed that, please go to Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Give us a like, give us a review. Please follow us on there and make sure that you can listen to every episode of The Psychology of Success. And a final thank you to Moment Digital, who have produced today's live show, and that's Neil Stainsby and Peter Wright. Hayley Brasnett is the editor for all of the episodes that go up on iTunes and Spotify. Dave Webster has been our researcher, and Emily Drake does all of our social media marketing so we can get out every single episode of The Psychology of Success.